following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Another week of Inside Eagle Nation. This is Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, to bring you another jam-packed episode of eventful week the past week for Georgia Southern, not only with football, but also Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball getting fired up. But as always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented to you by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook or Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. An eventful week may be an understatement for this week in Inside Eagle Nation. Before we dive into everything that is Georgia Southern football in the past week, taking a look around other action in Georgia Southern athletics, and everything has kind of come to a halt, whether it's the seasons have come to a close or the winter break for both golfs and sports like that. But Georgia Southern track and field will be at the Birmingham Southern Icebreaker coming up on Friday over in Birmingham to get things going and started in the track and field portion of the track and field cross-country schedule. But Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball, as we mentioned, getting fired up. Women's basketball started on Wednesday at Jacksonville State, fell 70-58, then moved on to Augusta up at Chris and Barry Fieldhouse and knocked off Augusta 76-63. So we're 1-1 through the first two games of the season. And you're getting introduced to a couple of new faces around Georgia Southern women's basketball, as Atiana Galden finished with 25 points in the opener against Jacksonville State. You had Shondell Vickers, who coming out of the first two games is averaging 12.5 rebounds per game. Eden Johnson, the redshirt freshman coming in and transferring from Fordham, averaging 11 points a game, double-figure scoring in both of the first two games for her. And so a lot of new faces, and they're really producing for women's basketball.
That's what you're seeing with both basketball teams so far. We'll get to the men in just a minute, but you don't exactly know what you're getting because you've never seen extended action from certain teams before. And for all the seniors that women lost, for all the seniors and the transfers that men ended up losing, that's not to say that who you have does not have talent, but because they're not known quantities, you just don't know what you're going to get. Good numbers early, regardless of the competition, are encouraging. I don't care if it's against a Division II team or if it's against Texas or whoever it is. You need to see numbers on a stat sheet so you can at least see that they're on some sort of a right track.
When you dive into the box score for against the Augusta game, Georgia Southern had 51 rebounds in the game, 21 offensive boards, and again, I know it's a Division II team, but when you come out with 13 rebounds for Shondell Vickers, 13 points, she had her first double-double as a Georgia Southern Eagle. She's got 9 of those in her career between splitting time at Florida Southwestern State. But it's all the new faces that you love to see for Georgia Southern, but you've also got Janiyah Lovehill putting up numbers. Tatum Barber, Sarah Moore, you know what they're going to give you. Sarah finished with 10 points and 7 rebounds against Augusta, and really having that presence down low is something that Georgia Southern hasn't necessarily had the last couple of years, but now that you've got Sarah Moore and also some pieces to add to that is really going to be huge for this women's basketball team.
I know that Patrice Butler was an inside presence, but she became more of a step-out shooter by the time she was a senior. You know that she could get the tough points down low, but for someone that is a dedicated low post player, that's something that Eagle women's basketball, you'd have to lend a little bit more credence into that, but I couldn't tell you the last time that there was one that had that ability to simply sit down on the block, not get called for 3 seconds, not only score, but also rebound.
You probably go back to a Brianna Jones and Danielle Spencer in the early 2010s would probably be the last time that Georgia Southern women's basketball has had really a solid post player down in the blocks. But Sarah Moore really stepping up to the task in her senior season, as well as, again, a couple of new pieces in Shondell Vickers, Eden Johnson, and really look for Lydia Freeman to develop at 6'5" for the freshman out of Atlanta. Georgia Southern men's basketball got it underway this weekend as well. On Wednesday against Florida National, got the 97-65 victory over the Conquistadors. And this is probably the last time I get to say Conquistadors throughout the season, so I'm going to do it as many times as I can. And then got the victory 91-79 over Coastal Georgia on Saturday inside Hanner Fieldhouse. A good start to the Brian Berg era. And yes, these are two teams that are non-Division I, but Florida National came out really shooting threes pretty well, and it's more of a ball game than you thought Georgia Southern was going to be, and not necessarily from Georgia Southern doing something wrong.
You needed sizable second-half runs to separate from both, and Florida National score looked more like what you were expecting, a 32-point win to give Brian Berg a win in his very first game. And then in the second game, the lead was as big as 24 in the second half after a 14-0 run. But credit Coastal Georgia for not quitting. They were able to whittle away the final 5 or 6 minutes. They had a couple of backcourt steals as they started to press. So 12 points looks like Georgia Southern didn't exactly play the way that it should have. Offensively, though, they shot 60% from the field. First time they've done that in just about a year and a half. They were 64% in the second half. And we spent most of the offseason talking about just how good this team was going to be on defense. Now, so far, they're holding opponents to 40%, which is pretty solid. Again, regardless of if it's a Division II team, non-Division I, Division I, whatever, they're showing numbers. But to score 90-plus in the first two games and the balance of the scoring, through two games, you have seven guys averaging at least 10 points per game. That's not going to hold up, but that's pretty stunning, regardless of wherever point in the season you are, to look down the sheet and see how many guys are contributing. With this motion offense, it's not as ball screen reliant as what the team was used to under Coach Byington. This system needs everybody to contribute, setting screens, getting open, and it doesn't matter who gets the points. You have to be faceless in that respect. If you're going to score, fine, but you're not going to have a guy that's going to have 25 a game. You're going to see it spaced out 13, 14, 13, 14. And I think that makes you more dangerous because whoever's on the floor and whoever's in the rotation, they all can do something.
And you talk about seven different guys averaging double figures through the first two games. And the thing that you really like to see, everybody has talked about the new faces around Georgia Southern men's basketball that Coach Berg has had to bring in. Top three scorers so far on the season are all newcomers. Caden Archie leads the way with 15 points a game. Kamari Brown with 14 points a game, and then 13.5 for Eric Boone, who I know you like a whole lot.
He's getting a chance to start. There are some guys that have to be sitting out the first two games of the season. We haven't seen Zach Bryant yet. We haven't seen Grant Weatherford yet. The hope is you'll get Zach Bryant back when the second semester begins. He had to sit because he was a mid-year transfer from UAB. We mentioned that Weatherford was out the first two games because of team disciplinary reasons, so he is going to be ready to go by the time that if Georgia Southern plays Davidson in a couple Fridays, or if they happen to add a game after the exam break and not have to wait all that time to play their next opponent. But Boone has stepped in really well. He was somebody that had stuffed the stat sheet a year ago at John A. Logan College up in the state of Illinois. Nearly 16 points per game, 7 assists, also 3 steals per game. He had 4 steals on Saturday against Coastal Georgia. He can affect the game in a lot of different ways. Good at attacking the rim. He can also step out and shoot. He was 38% from 3 during that single year with John A. Logan. Caden Archie is somebody that he is so gifted. He is so talented. He simply needs to be in a place for longer than 2 months. It didn't work out at TCU. It didn't work out at UTEP, but he's a former top 100 national recruit. Georgia Southern basketball has never had that. A 4-star guy. If he stays healthy and he continues to develop on the offensive end, defensively, he's really good. He plays with such a wide base. He's naturally athletic. But if he continues to develop that offensive game, I think he's an all-conference guy. I don't think he'll have much of an issue getting to that point. And then Kamari Brown, a super athlete, a 46-inch vertical guy, stands about 6'4". He has changed his body over the last 3 or 4 months. He's gained 20 pounds just since he got to campus, speaking to the work that's been done in the strength and conditioning area with Brandon Lee, somebody that can shoot, can play defense, and if you saw the dunk he had in the second half on Saturday against Coastal Georgia, you know he can get up. And somebody like Elijah McCadden, we don't immediately mention, but make no mistake, he is going to be one of the most, if not the most important player for this team as they continue to move about the season.
Georgia Southern women's basketball will look ahead. They face off against the Furman Paladins in the return of a home-and-home. That'll be on Thursday, 6 p.m. The tip-off will be on the air at 5:30 on gseagles.com. And then on Sunday, it's a little bit of a coin flip for Georgia Southern women's basketball as of now. Supposed to play Presbyterian. Coming out that Presbyterian having COVID issues the last couple of days, and so that one has been canceled. Georgia Southern women's basketball trying to find an opponent for Sunday. There's a possibility it will be at home. There's also a possibility it could be on the road. We'll let you know when we know on next Sunday. But Georgia Southern women's basketball, like you mentioned, they'll be off this week. The next game will be on the road on Friday at Davidson, December the 11th, as making the trip up to an old SoCon foe and Bob McKillop.
Oh, boy.
Get to see a screen out high and all that.
Well, the hope is it'd be...
Yeah, you hope you get to see it.
COVID considering, and there's over a week in between games, but I had a chance to watch a little bit of Davidson play Texas in the Maui Invitational, which was moved stateside this year, no longer in Hawaii because of COVID. They're playing that in Asheville. Davidson only about 2 hours away, so I'm sure that they would have had a lot more fans had this not been one of those multi-team bubbles that they've been trying to create all across the country. Played Texas really well. Texas number 16 in the country, and Davidson had a shot at two threes at the end of the game to win and knock off a top 25 team. And that's the thing about top 25 opponents if you're a mid-major. If you're going to get them, make sure you do it on a neutral floor, and even better, make sure there's no crowd there so you can really level the playing field. But Hung Jun Lee is somebody that's played really well the first couple of games. Kellen Grady is a four-year starter for Davidson. He is one of the best players in school history, and that is a long list that includes Stephen Curry. That's what got Davidson on the map not quite 15 years ago, but to think that Bob McKillop is still there, 32 years in, living right across from campus, and the guy has not aged a second since he took that job. The media guide picture that shows him when we were still in the SoCon to the media guide picture now, I swear it's the same one that he got the first day on campus. It is unreal.
So you're saying they could use the picture that Mark Janak took of him when he was at Davidson and it would be the same thing?
Yeah. Then they might. There's no need to. That hair is as white as the clouds.
For a while, they had the same picture of head coach Rodney Hinnon and a lot of media guides from about 2000 when he took over.
Yeah, we let him know that too. He's like, oh, you saw this? Yeah. We saw those, Skipper. We did.
The next game for men's basketball after that Davidson game on Friday the 11th will be at home against Mercer Sunday the 13th. That'll be after, hopefully, Georgia Southern football takes on Appalachian State on the 12th. And that's a Mercer team that just knocked off Georgia Tech a couple of days ago up at McCamish Pavilion. It's a struggling Georgia Tech team after getting beat by Georgia State in four overtimes up in Atlanta, and then Mercer coming in on Friday night before Georgia Southern played Georgia State this past weekend.
Yeah, they only had 48 hours to get ready for Mercer after what was a grinding game. In the postgame, I can remember one of the Yellow Jackets commenting, look, my knees hurt, my shoulders hurt, my back hurts, everything hurts. I don't know. I'm going to get ready, get in the tub, and then get ready for Mercer in a couple of days. And I don't think Mercer was really threatened. They took the lead early in the first half, and they didn't trail after that. They're down one of their best players from last year. I remember Ethan Stair was a guy who was 6'6", one of the toughest guys I've ever watched, his ability to shoot and defend. Greg Gary is the head coach in his second year. He was an assistant for Matt Painter at Purdue. That's going to be a tough matchup regardless of where the game is played, and that's right smack dab in the middle of a stretch where the Eagles are playing three games in 5 days with Carver coming up 2 days following that on a Monday night inside Hanner Fieldhouse. So after not playing for a couple of weeks, unless the Eagles could find somebody at the last minute to fill a vacancy, then they're going to get three games really quickly to find out just how good they maybe can be.
A busy stretch for men's basketball, but that about a week away, so enough time to take a breath, get enough relaxation, get enough hydration.
Pass your exams.
All that. But Georgia Southern football moved up to Atlanta this past weekend to take on the Georgia State Panthers. It was a challenging week, and we talked with Coach Lunsford and the staff earlier on Thursday of last week. And with everything that had gone on, and one of the coaches had a great quote that, think about how much this team has gone through since halftime of the Army game. You look at the second half of the Army game didn't go the way Georgia Southern wanted. You have the post-game debacle of everything going on with the plane, not getting back to Statesboro until about 7 o'clock on Sunday night.
I think debacle may be putting it too nicely.
I was trying to sugarcoat it a little bit.
I appreciate that.
I appreciate you.
Yeah.
And then on Monday, everything coming out with the four players being arrested for Georgia Southern football. And then you've got to get ready for a game that some call a rivalry, some don't call a rivalry, but it's a big game nonetheless, no matter what you call it.
And I'll even tack on a couple of more, finding out late last week that Randy Wade was not going to be able to make the trip. Zion McGee was going to be a game-tie decision, a game-time decision. He did not suit up. Shai Wirtz was questionable. Ultimately, he played and only missed action towards the end of the contest when that shoulder flared up. And again, we don't have any update on his status for this weekend. It's way too early to see if he's going to be able to go against Florida Atlantic or if that Florida Atlantic game's even going to get played. And then the one that kind of caught people off guard was the fact that Raynard Ellis opted out of the season, yep, which is what you can do this year because of the waiver that was put in place by the NCAA. Because of COVID, you could opt out of the season at any point. Everybody gets the year back anyway, but he decided he was going to opt out, so he can either come back next year or he can move on to another program. And the indications look like that he's not going to be in Statesboro by the time that 2021 gets here. Regarding Georgia State, I don't think it really matters whether or not it is a rivalry. It's the fact that it's a game in your division. It's a game against a team in your state. Unfortunately, they did get the win to retake the lead in the series. I think the in-state series is probably the best way to call it. If they want to call it a rivalry, fine. If some people with Georgia Southern want to call it a rivalry, fine. But the point is that the Eagles did not do enough running the football late, and that has been an unfortunate theme this season. The only time where they've really closed out a game offensively, and I was thinking about this on the way over to do this on Monday, the best game that I think Georgia Southern played this year, the most important game that they played, I think, was South Alabama, because they had to score two fourth quarter touchdowns to beat a like team. Now you're going to think, well, why didn't you say Campbell? It came down 20-6. Well, okay, Campbell's an FCS team. You're supposed to beat an FCS team. I don't care if it's by a point. South Alabama's a conference team that you trailed going into the fourth quarter on your field. It took two Wesley Kennedy touchdown runs, meaning that the offense had to win the game, and they did. That's really the only game the offense has had to win this year. Should have won it against Louisiana, only to see them kick a field goal from 10 miles away. There were other instances where they could have had the put away, but it was a missed field goal or a drive that resulted in a punt, or not being able to have that instinct to say, look, we are winning this game, you are not. And they just didn't do that enough, and we'll get to the news that eventually came from that after the state game. But even so, with everybody that wasn't there and the inability to run the football late, you're up 11 points in the fourth quarter. You're up 11 in the fourth quarter. This is the third straight week you've had a double-digit lead. You've blown all three of them. Now, granted, Texas State was a win, came back to win that game by two on senior day, blew the chance to beat Army last week, which I think you could still feel the effects a little bit, even though it didn't really show itself until late in the game. But against a team that is in-state, in your division, you're at their place by 11, you got to close that out. And it's the biggest fourth-quarter lead that Georgia Southern has blown since that Texas State game back in 2005. So that's how much it doesn't happen.
And we were looking at it more in the second half, and it was just Georgia Southern's inability to run the ball. You had the big run by Logan Wright, 56 yards.
On the first play.
Correct.
Great way to start the half.
Right.
Phenomenal way to start the half.
You thought it was the way it was going to go, but it's not the way the rest of the second half went.
3.5 yards per carry the rest of the game. Can't do it. You cannot be an option team and average 3.5 yards a carry. Well, granted, Army did the week before, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, but they go four downs and
that was their idea. That their identity
right.
is
they want to do that.
Yeah. 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards, fourth and one, we'll just get three more yards. That's how they're built. That's what they want to do. Georgia Southern is not cut from that cloth. But when you had a 63-yard touchdown earlier in the game to give you a two-score lead, you had rebuilt the two-score lead on the first play of the fourth quarter when Logan Wright dove in for his second touchdown. 24-13 at that point, you should have been ready to lock it up and say we're good. But State scored the last 17 points. Did the depth get to Georgia Southern on defense? Probably. Can't say it for sure, but probably. They started to throw the ball more effectively. Quad Brown threw for better than 370. And then Georgia Southern couldn't pick up first downs. They missed their last seven third downs. Can't be an option team and not convert on third down. That's been a bread and butter for the Eagles this year. How much better it's gotten. Can't run, can't get third downs. You're not going to win. And it took until late, but State made more plays, and the Eagles had to go to Justin Tomlin again in the final couple of minutes because of Shai's shoulder. And really the only experience that Tomlin has had in that kind of situation, you can say to a degree Minnesota the year before, but there were only a few seconds left after they had gotten that game-winning touchdown from Tyler Johnson. The week before against Army, he really didn't get a chance to have a drive because of losing his helmet, the clock, and all that other stuff. And then this week, it's back-to-back turnovers. So I think that the more experience you gather, the better you're going to be. But think about the experience also that guys like Sam Kenderson got. First couple career carries out of the Wild Eagle. Jaylen White, we've heard all year long, wait for the young bull, wait for the young bull. Well, he finally carried the ball four times. So maybe they're going to be more involved over the last two or three games of this season. You need experience when experienced guys aren't able to perform or aren't able to simply play for reasons that maybe they couldn't control, maybe they just made improper decisions. But then we get the news on Sunday after all this is done that Georgia Southern decides to make a change at offensive coordinator.
It would be a final 30-24 Georgia State over Georgia Southern. That's the last we'll speak of that for now. And then you move on to what you just mentioned. It came out Sunday afternoon, a change at offensive coordinator. Bob DeBest was relieved of his duties, and then Doug Roos takes over the coordinator role and now will be coaching the quarterbacks. And it's somebody that's not unfamiliar to what Georgia Southern tries to do. He's not unfamiliar to success at Georgia Southern doing what they try to do. And so I know it's difficult with only two games left in the season. You thought at this point your season would be over. Your season should be done at this point, but because of COVID, two games added to the tail end of the schedule.
That's right. Yeah, Saturday was the last game that was scheduled, but now you got to get ready for two more.
And so you've got FAU hopefully coming to Statesboro this coming Saturday, and then Appalachian State a week from now. There's not a whole lot that you can really change at this point in the season as far as schematics goes. There's a couple of nuances that you can change. There's a thought process you can change, but X's and O's wise, there's not a whole lot you can change. But getting the new mindset, getting the new perspective, and that's a lot what Coach Roos talked about with the media on Monday, it's not necessarily coming in a wholesale change of your offense. It's going to look pretty similar. It's just the mindset and the perspective that he's going to bring more to the offense is really what the change is right now.
You might see more personnel groupings. You might see a little bit more movement before the snap. You might see guys playing in different spots. You might see more Kenderson. You might see more Jaylen White. But one thing that I did think about while Doug was talking, remember it was a 2-QB system in 14 and 15 with Kevin Ellison and Fabian Upshaw. Now, if Shai's able to go, fine, but that would seem to be even more of a reason if he can play than let Justin Tomlin go in the third series like Fabian used to do whenever Kevin came out, and then you just go hot-hand approach. I think GoDaddy Bowl, when the last play that Ellison had was his touchdown pass to Monte Crockett in the second quarter, Fabian played the entire second half and ran for four touchdowns. There was no need for Fabian to come out of the game because he was hot as a pistol. He was doing exactly what he was brought to Statesboro to do. Pistol, I just got that. Look, I'm not saying it's going to be a multi-QB deal, but now that Tomlin has played a little bit the last few weeks, now that Kenderson has gotten, I know it's only two reps, but now that he has gotten into the offensive fold, maybe it's as simple as that, just the new blood, the new idea, the new perspective. And maybe it's enough to, look, let's not act like Georgia Southern's going to go out and score 85 points on Saturday. Let's pump the brakes, and let's try to establish some reasonable expectations. Of course, you want to score more, but what the team is looking to do is get into the end zone more, and that's been another theme, the idea of doing it when it has to be done. They've only scored touchdowns on 58% of the red zone possessions. That's in the bottom third of the country, and they were in the bottom third last year. They were in the bottom third the year before. The biggest difference for this offense is going to be getting into the end zone, whether it's from 50 yards out, 20 yards out, or 2 yards out.
And let's not joke around that this offense hasn't necessarily been good at times. You've seen this offense move the ball. It's just being able, like you mentioned, to convert in the red zone and not settle for three when you need to have six. That's been the big problem this year, but you've seen this offense move the ball, averaging over 260, almost 270 yards a game on the ground. Yeah. And you're getting into the red zone 36 times on the season. It's not a matter of if the offense is there, if the weapons are there for this offense, it's just a matter of being able to use the new perspective, the new eyes, the new brain of being able to take what has had success so far this year and then maybe tweak a little bit more in certain situations.
Up to fifth in the country in rushing with that 267 total. Three and outs way down this year. You think back to last year, three and out percentage was almost 40%. And by product, not punting as much this year. We mentioned that Anthony Beck only punted 10 times the first four games of the season. That was the lowest over a four-game stretch in 5 years. But the games where Georgia Southern really needed more touchdowns and they didn't get it, it's starting to catch up to them. You looked at a 6-2 record, and you were happy with a 6-2 record. You would be, right? At that point, I think Georgia Southern and Army, they were two of 15 teams that had six wins to that point. So you were thrilled in the middle of a pandemic to still have that kind of success. But when push came to shove against teams, Louisiana, Coastal, Army, Georgia State, teams that all have better than 500 records, the inability to have success in the end zone cost them all four. They took care of teams they could. You know, South Alabama, a Troy, a Texas State, these are all sub-500 teams. So they could beat who they could beat, but the chinks in the armor were there. And that's why Bob is not the offensive coordinator anymore. I think Doug's going to be phenomenal. He was here for 2 years, but on a personal note with Bob, work with him for almost three full seasons. An amazing amount of respect for him. As high integrity a guy as I have ever met. So open, so accommodating, so professional. Our visits with him got to the point where we would talk football, but he would tell stories about his time playing for Jim Wacker at Southwest Texas State and then how grateful he was to get the opportunity to coach, his time with Coach Francione, his time with Coach Tiller at Purdue, working at Texas A&M and seeing the things that he's seen, all the places he's gone in 40 years. I would imagine he'll try to get back into coaching. Remember, he just had his granddaughter within the last couple of months, son Cam.
Yeah, my guess, he and Janet are, if not, they're already are on their way to Texas
I would
to see
imagine.
The grandbaby.
But really cool people. Awesome football coach. Wish him nothing but the best. And think about what he had to do to this offense when he got here. How much of a mess were things in 2017?
I'm just going to answer that with a yes.
Dumpster fire isn't even close to where Georgia Southern's offense was 3 years ago. Bob comes in, top 10 rushing offense, five turnovers all year. You don't do that. You're not an FBS team and turn the ball over five times in 13 games. You don't do it. Even last year when it dipped a little bit, only 11 turnovers. Ball security has been a key. Not throwing an interception for 25 games. That's unheard of. Look, in option teams, don't throw the football. I don't care who you are. You don't throw an interception for two seasons. You're doing something pretty crazy. You are doing something that is historic. He was able to help get this offense back on the right track. Doug's going to try to do the same thing, but for Bob and his family, thank you for what you did.
Without a doubt. And I think Coach Lunsford and even Coach Roos mentioned it on their media availability earlier this week that Coach Roos talked about how it was a great opportunity. He was excited to get back into coordinating, but he didn't want to do it in these circumstances because now he's without one of his best friends that he came to know over the last couple of years and somebody that he really looked up to and trusted as far as working a football game with. There's a lot that Coach Roos has learned from Bob DeBest. Let's not make it sound like Coach DeBest didn't bring anything to this program by any stretch of the imagination, both on the football field and off of it. But it'll be a 6 o'clock kickoff for Georgia Southern against the FAU Owls coming up this weekend at Allen E. Paulson Stadium. Before we dive into the Owls, we'll take a break for some Eagle Tales with Roger Inman.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
Roger, your Rolodex is probably pretty substantial over more than 40 years in Statesboro, but somebody that kind of gets lost in the shuffle, but somebody that did a lot for Georgia Southern during those early years of football was Hank Schomber. What do you remember?
Story of Hank Schomber. Hank was here for a pretty daggum long time himself. He did a lot of good articles for Georgia Southern. He was more prominent into the baseball industry. Won the Sports Writers Award for several years in a row with those guys back in the 80s. But Hank was not as versatile as I was, but he was close. He was into the financing side. He was into the media relations side. Not much that you couldn't have got Hank to do when he was here. In the early days of football, he was even our travel director. Fitzpatrick would be kind of stunned to see how we did stuff back then and how, compared to how we do it now. But we was up in Chattanooga playing football, and Saturday during the game, Hank come up to Irk and wanted to talk about some financial situations. He forgot to cut the movies off to the rooms that night, and we had a tremendous charge of late-night movies that the players were watching. Irk wouldn't pay for. They told Hank, you should cut the damn TVs off yourself, but since you chose not to cut the movie channels off, y'all worry about how to pay for it. We had another situation up at James Madison where we stayed at all Holiday Inn up there, and a handful of our players, I won't mention Gerald, Ricky, or Tracy's name, but borrowed some materials from the hotel so they'd stay warm on the bus on the way back from James Madison back home. But Hank wanted to explain to Irk about we had some problems at the hotel, and Irk said, I don't want to know nothing until the game's over. Well, all the stuff was sent back to the hotel, so it was no big deal. But several players had a large time at our sunrise service for a few days after that, reminding them they shouldn't take stuff out of the hotels. But Hank, it was unique when he was in charge of travel, because we had no easy travel. Even our air flights were not easy, because they, you know, the shortest bus trip we had probably, you know, Boone back then. It wasn't, you know, real short.
Thank you, Roger, once again. And I think you may have said it best a few minutes ago that if Roger had a Rolodex, he might need a couple of them from all the people that he has encountered here in Statesboro.
Two thoughts. One, if he does, it's probably on little bits of paper that are stuffed into his pockets. Or two, it's all in his head, and I am not going to go inside of that head outside of what we do with Eagle Tales each week. I think that's enough.
No, that's like diving into Terry Harvin's phone, because everybody in his contact, he has everybody's life story his contacts.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. If you ask Terry for a number, he'll send it to you, and you get their wife's name, their children's names, their birthday. I think what they had for lunch is in there. It's pretty impressive.
That's his sales background coming out.
Oh, no doubt. And it's amazing. I love it. But Georgia Southern looks ahead to the Florida Atlantic Owls. Take two of this.
Can't we just take the show that we did back in mid-September, just use that?
You know, I was thinking about that, but there's a lot that's changed for this Florida Atlantic team since we almost saw them on the second game of the season. We found out earlier that week, I think it was Monday of what was supposed to be game week the first time, they announced that Nick Tronte was going to be the quarterback. And now you've got Javian Posey, who has taken over as quarterback, came in the fourth quarter of that Western Kentucky game, the fourth game of the season. His first career action at quarterback, led that team to a comeback victory in the game-winning drive, and he's stuck ever since.
I remember our talk about Tronte from a couple of months ago. Remember, Georgia Southern recruited him at one point. Coach Lunsford brought that up that night on Inside Georgia Southern Football at Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida. He was somebody that was the number two last year behind Chris Robinson. He was the closeout quarterback. He was the wild Tronte, I think, when he was the QB run guy, even though he wasn't somebody that was doing that very much when he was a redshirt at Indiana. Didn't get a chance to see him on the roster when the Eagles went up there 3 years ago. Did okay, not great, but I think that they knew he was limited. A fine runner, but just not somebody that could really affect the game through the air. Posey was a wide receiver last year that Tronte barely beat out a quarterback in camp this year. And remember all the issues they had during camp, not having spring ball, only getting back in July, so they had to get up to speed even more quickly. But it became apparent that Posey has too much athleticism to not be on the field. Look, he's not a quarterback. He's an athlete that he can really run. He's one of the fastest quarterbacks I've watched on film. I'd compare him to Shy speed-wise, maybe even a tick faster. He has made some throws where you're, what are you doing? When he came in against Western Kentucky, he threw a pop-up on his first drive. He was trying to throw it out of bounds, but I think the story said that the wind was gusting so much that night in Boca Raton, it just blew it right back into the field, and Western Kentucky's guy had it drop right into his chest. But the next drive, he leads the game winner, and that was the only touchdown drive when they won that game 10-6. The next week in the Shula Bowl, he goes off for 182 yards rushing, most ever by an FAU quarterback, and then against UMass, a game that FAU was going to win. They didn't do great, but he did throw for more than 200 yards. So I think that for someone that may not be blessed passing, he did show that he could do it if needed. And I suspect that if this game does get played Saturday, that Georgia Southern loads off the box against all those talented runners and how talented he is as a runner, and they've got to make him throw the football. They have to.
And this is an FAU team that they have been hit by COVID about as much as anybody in the country. they've had multiple games knocked out last week. They're now coming off of an impromptu bye week after they and Middle Tennessee got axed last week. But you came into the season when Georgia Southern was supposed to be their first game, and you thought that B.J. Emmons was going to be the starting running back, but now you've got James Charles, Malcolm Davidson really leading the carry. Emmons is still a part of their running attack, has battled through a couple of injuries this year, but this is a team that really wants to run the ball. You look at it, 197 yards on the ground per game, but that doesn't necessarily do justice quite as much as this team wants to run the ball.
And it's QB run. It's not option game. It's that Gulf Coast offense that Taggart developed. Remember, he's got option roots from his time as a quarterback at Western Kentucky, and then he took some things from South Florida and then his year out at Oregon. It's mostly shotgun with power gap scheme. So there's going to be a lot of pulling linemen. And the QB run element means that when Javion Posey takes a snap, even though he's got a bunch of talent surrounding him, most of the time, he's not giving that ball up. He has more carries than any other guy on that roster. Look, Emmons is a former number one national recruit as a running back. They lost Larry McCammon for the year with an ankle injury. He would have been in that rotation. Davidson has battled injuries for two straight years. Charles, someone who has somehow maintained mostly healthiness, if that's a word, this year. He did have a stinger earlier this season, but that's been his only health scare. They've got a lot of different guys they can plug in, but now that this is Posey's offense, it really is his offense. It's going to be a lot of old school student body right, student body left. If you like that kind of terminology, he's going to try to get behind his massive offensive line. They're going to use motion to open up the middle. And then a lot of times it's waiting for guys to clear. And he's got the speed where if he can hit the hole, second, third level, there's nobody that's going to get him. That 70-yard touchdown run he had against UMass, there was just nobody on the field that could stay with him.
Flip it over to the defensive side for Florida Atlantic. It's a team with 22 sacks on the season, and the guy that really just lights up the entire stat sheet is the outside linebacker, Leighton McCarthy. 10 tackles for loss, 8 sacks as a linebacker, and he's a guy that is, and you're going to laugh at this, but I liken him to a Bobby Boucher who, when the center snaps the ball, he gives it to the quarterback, and he tries to tackle that guy until he gives it off to another guy, and then he tries to tackle that guy.
Caught me there for a minute. Look no further than their first game against Charlotte, and they didn't get going until October because of all their COVID issues. His first game, he had 10 tackles, 4 tackles for loss, and 3 sacks. That's good for most people first season.
Yeah.
He was one of the guys that we had talked about back in September is you got to know where 13 is on defense. You got to know where 13 is on defense. He's had an even better season than I think they expected. Breakout year is a relative term, but he has been a key reason why that defense is giving up less than 12 points per game. They've played 6 games. They've given up 6 touchdowns. Yeah. Nobody's doing anything against them.
No.
You can't. You could say part of it's the schedule, but that defense under Jim Leavitt, they're really, really good.
And they're only giving up 293 yards a game, just over 100 yards on the ground, 187 through the air. And it's a team that they're not giving up anything in the red zone. You look at the red zone numbers, I had to go back and check it a couple of times to make sure I was putting in the right numbers.
Yeah.
Overall, teams are only scoring 6 out of 11 times in the red zone. Red zone touchdowns, 1 of 11.
That's nuts. That's nuts.
I don't understand how that happens. Like, you're inside the 20. How does somebody not stumble into the end zone?
Twice.
Well, maybe, yeah, I guess
maybe
one person did.
Well, maybe 3 times, but only 1 out of 11 possessions. Regardless of who it is on the other side of the field, that's one where if you're Doug Roos, you're probably looking at it saying, okay, we got to figure out why. And then you click on the tape, it's, oh, Amon Ross can make plays. Oh, Leighton McCarthy can make plays. Oh, Zion Gilbert can make plays. They're making plays when they have to make plays. So that means Georgia Southern's got to be even better if they get those red zone opportunities on Saturday.
And that's the thing. You look at it, yes, they've only played 6 games, but that's less than 2 red zone trips per game for opponents. That's eye-popping numbers that you don't see in reality. And it just goes to show you, and we knew that the defense was going to be a strength. We talked about that back in September, but I don't think you knew how much of a strength it was going to be. And yes, it's a weird year. It's a different year, and so I don't know how much stock you can put into this going forward, but this is a pretty stout unit.
I trusted having Jim Leavitt running a defense because of where he has been and the amount of experience he has. I mean, he was the head coach for 12 years at South Florida. He spent time with Coach Taggart out at Oregon. He brought him back towards the end of 2019 before Willie got fired from that job as a defensive analyst. So when Taggart was fortunate enough to get the Florida Atlantic job after he was let go, the first call was going to be to Jim Leavitt. Because for FAU the year before, not only did Lane Kiffin go to Ole Miss, but both coordinators went to South Florida. So they were going to have spots to fill anyway. They have two offensive coordinators with Clint Trickin and Drew Maringer, former Texas quarterback, and then with Leavitt running the defense. I was expecting this to be a little bit the other way around, maybe not completely. I thought the offense with all those weapons and all those transfers, I think that they would be a little bit to score more. I thought the defense would be good, but just not this good. But their defense, look, they've only been playing football for 20 years, but when the season's done, it may end up being the best defense they've ever had.
It's going to be a fun one to watch. Hopefully it happens on Saturday, a 6 o'clock kickoff between Georgia Southern and FAU. We'll be on the air at 4 o'clock. Now that it's post-Thanksgiving, get started into the Christmas spirit. It's time to start watching Christmas movies. Already watched the Santa Claus once.
Just once? You're slacking.
Well, for now. It was a busy weekend.
Okay.
And you know my thoughts. You don't think Christmas. You don't watch Christmas movies. You don't listen to Christmas music until after Thanksgiving. And then it is all Christmas all the time. Have you watched any Christmas movies yet?
I haven't really had the TV on much the last couple of days. But I know I'm going to find the Santa Claus at some point, and I'm going to find Elf. I know I'm going to find Christmas Vacation. Those are going to be multiple viewings because that is what you do. That's what everyone does. That's part of this whole life thing that we're all doing here.
So are you more of those kind of movies, or do you go back to like the classics of like Frosty and Rudolph and the Grinch, the real Grinch, not that Jim Carrey thing?
If they're on, I think you have to give them their due just because, I mean, to go that long, they've earned your respect. You got to watch them at least once. But it's anything else. You like what you like. And I grew up on the Santa Claus. That came out when I was young. Elf came out, in 2003? So
wow.
I would have been...
Seems like it was sooner than that.
Yeah. I would have been 18 when that came out. So right towards the end of high school, going into college, and then Christmas Vacation would have come out when I was real young. But that's the one where it can appeal to newer audiences just because it's so funny, but it gives you that nostalgia when Clark's up in the attic wearing whatever it is he's wearing on the 8mm film strip watching Christmas from whatever the 1950s were, and Uncle Lewis with, he's probably still got the hairpiece on, but it doesn't look as bad as it did in the actual movie. It's a way to combine everything, and that's where I think Christmas Vacation specifically is kind of a cut above everything else.
See, I think Home Alone is that for me. Home Alone 1 and 2, 3 and 4, forget that.
If it's not Macaulay Culkin,
yeah, forget that.
No, we're not going there.
Home Alone came on, I think it was Thanksgiving night. I was up with my family up in Atlanta, and we were FaceTiming Rachel, and she's like, "What are you and your dad laughing at?" And it was at the point in Home Alone whenever they're going through the house, and my dad and I laugh just like it's the first time we've seen it.
It's what you do.
Yeah.
You know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, you know when he grabs that doorknob, he's going to get burnt. The M's going to be in his hand. He's going to dive into the snow.
Every time. Because
yes,
it makes you feel like it's Christmas all the time.
It's just like from now until December 26th, there's a good shot if you're around Danny and I, there's pretty good shot that you're going to hear some Santa Claus references. And
what, we're 3-4 weeks away from Christmas Eve, so what has it been, 10 years or so now that A Christmas Story has been running for 24 hours consecutively? So at some point, you're probably going to catch a few minutes of that. That's another classic. It's the time of the year that comes every year. The older you get, it means something different, but you can't help but think when stuff like that comes on, it takes everybody back to when they were a kid, sitting there and waiting for Christmas morning and everything under the tree. It just does it to everyone.
I absolutely love Christmas. It's my favorite time of the year. There's no doubt about it. But in the middle of Christmas spirit, it'll be time for Georgia Southern football come Saturday, 6 o'clock the kickoff, 4 o'clock the airtime on the Georgia Southern Sports Network. Until this weekend, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
Been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.